You know, Columbo, you're almost likable in a shabby sort of way. Maybe it's the way you come slouching in here with your shop-worn bag of tricks.
Me? Tricks?
The humility, the seeming absent-mindedness, the homey anecdotes about the family, the wife, you know?
Really?
Yeah, Lieutenant Columbo, fumbling and stumbling along. But it's always the jugular that he's after. And I imagine that more often than not, he's successful.
I appreciate that compliment, Mrs. Williams. And I particularly appreciate it coming from you.
I must tell you, I'm disappointed in you, Lieutenant. I'm really very disappointed.
How's that?
You've reduced yourself from veiled threats and insinuations to vaudeville. Now, what did you really expect to achieve by this tasteless stunt? Did you expect me to throw myself at your feet, confessing?
To License to Spiel. I'm Carl Wonders.
And I'm Thad Haight.
Today we're going to be taking a look at the second TV pilot for Columbo. This was the first one that they actually produced for the purposes of releasing a TV show called Ransom for a Dead Man. And this one is another story by Levinson and Link, not based on any play like the last time, and directed by the same guy that did the last episode, although you can't really tell based on some of the, I would call them tricks, I guess, that he likes to use in this episode. We'll get to some of those. This is another one that you'd seen, I think, already before we did this. Right. Okay.
I don't know if I watched all of season one, but I definitely watched the two TV movies and a few episodes into season one.
Okay. Yeah. So this one stars Lee Grant as the murderer of the week, I guess.
Who is, impressively, I noticed this when doing research, still alive at the ripe old age of 99.
Yes. Good for her.
Yeah.
And I was reading that she and Peter Falk were really good friends. They actually did a play together later on in the same year that this episode came out. And I think Peter Falk won a Tony for it, actually.
Nice.
Yeah. So I think they definitely have chemistry in this on screen. So what did you think of this? The first made for TV story, because the last one was based on a play, which was based on a story before and everything. This is kind of a new thing.
I like how twisty it was. Mm-hmm. Like, this one felt more like in depth to this. There was more depth to this story, I think, than the last one. Like, especially with the fake out with the daughter, where having her do the fake attempt, having her plant fake evidence first to sort of lull the murderer into not security, but knowing that it's like into not thinking the police are going to get involved in any way on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That she thinks Columbo's done and has moved on. And yeah, no, I think that works pretty well. It's the second time in a row that we've had Columbo up to some specific shenanigans to try to trick the murderer into revealing themselves, I would say. Mm-hmm. Like last time with the, we're going to fake out, pretend that the mistress has killed herself. This one certainly doesn't waste any time getting going.
Oh no, the murder happens immediately.
I mean, we open with her putting together a ransom note, and her husband comes home, comes in the door, and she shoots him in the most 70s way possible.
Just the weird, like, strobe light effect with that. Like,
yeah.
My reaction watching that is someone could get a seizure watching this. I also thought it was like, I guess this was a thing. This was a rich people in the 70s sort of thing. But like, right before he dies, he burns his junk mail.
Yeah, that was like the last thing he did.
He just like throwing mail into the fire in the fireplace. It's like, Could you imagine if that was like how you handled junk mail today? Like you just had like your junk mail incinerator or whatever.
Well, I mean, recycling, I guess, is the new incinerating when you think about it. So
I question whether paper recycling actually gets recycled.
Yeah.
I also question the environmental impact of not recycling paper, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it is literally a renewable resource.
It decomposes and...
It decomposes, yeah, and it literally grows on trees.
Right. Yes.
But, yeah.
Yeah. So we see the, as I mentioned, the ransom note getting put together, and then she has this tape recording of phone calls. I guess they record their phone calls because they're lawyers or something, and right, he... And she... splices out. Well, no,
that gets explained. It was because of the fancy callback, yeah, machine. So, like, that's how she makes the call, but that's also why they have those recordings, because he would have, yep, had fancy, he would have set up recordings to talk to people.
Mm-hmm. So this is not the only time we will see this type of trick being done. One, you mentioned the recording machine and the callback machine. Like, one of the fun things I think about watching these is all of the what quote unquote high tech stuff that you see in some of these episodes that nowadays is kind of quaint.
So the way it's done, sure, but like,
yeah, I mean, it's cool.
It's still like that sort of thing. Like, I was like, yes, I'm sure offices have technology, mm-hmm, like that now, yeah, as well. But like, that's not like something that I immediately think of as something that would be done is like setting up recordings to call. I mean, right, I'm sure it can, I'm sure there are computer programs that'll do it for you.
Mm hmm.
Technically, this was a computer program that could do it for you. I did like seeing the close-up of the punch card there.
Yes.
But, like, that still feels like sort of like a high-end business sort of thing, even, mm-hmm, today.
Well, she tosses out, like, oh, if I need to call so-and-so, I just put this. And, like, does she have somebody that's punching the cards? Because that's not something that you can just do, I don't think. Because I know, like... You know, computer programs used to be done on punch cards, and it was it's not like you can just sit down and say, oh, I'm going to call so-and-so. So you sit there and you punch out the holes, I don't think.
No, you would type it into the computer and the computer would give you the card.
Right, but I didn't see the computer there.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. It's interesting. The
computer wouldn't fit in that building.
That's true. That's a good point.
Well, no, that's just the other office. That's just, there's a whole other room that's just the computer that we don't see.
She could have a computer in her house, though. I mean, that house is gigantic.
Maybe that's why they don't have a bathroom on the first floor. The computer's there instead.
You know, so I actually looked that up. And uh-huh. I think the explanation is that powder rooms became a thing in post-Second World War home construction. And I think this, yeah, is a house that is clearly built well before that.
Yeah, and I think... and. Today, it would have been renovated at some point in the last 70 years to, mm-hmm, add a bathroom on the first, yep, floor. But in the 70s, I suppose maybe that's not necessarily a...
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. My house was built in 1910, and the addition that included the half bath on the first floor was put in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
Yep. Yeah. I like that they've repeated their little gag. So Lee Grant shoots her husband and... drags him outside, and they pan over to his briefcase sitting there on the entry bench, and then she comes back and takes it.
Yes,
and
I noticed that. Also, something I definitely noticed in these shots where they show her driving his body away to dump it, like,
mm-hmm,
I notated it that the camera has terrible astigmatism because I'm sure it has a different word for cameras, but the headlights are generating, oh, these giant, yes, vertical and horizontal beams outward.
Yep. That would be a driving hazard if that's what they actually did.
Right. Well, I, yeah, mean, they do for some people. That's why,
yeah,
you know,
that's, yeah,
that's why I was able to give it a name. I sometimes
have trouble with that. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I have fancy glasses to try to like make that less of a problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know that the headlights have to have those big, like, I guess lens flares almost, so we can have that amazing dissolve from her eyes to the car headlights. I think in my notes I said she gets Gary Mitchell eyes. there in that dissolve.
Hey, well, at least you know they weren't using day for night.
That's true. I mean, aside from the flying rear projection, I think this, yeah. Again, I think this is shot really well. Mm-hmm. They must be doing something with the lens because even the street lamp's doing the same thing.
Well, maybe that's why they always did day for night back then. Maybe. They couldn't.
Yeah, so she murders her husband, and then we see her mailing this the ransom note that she put together. So the idea here is to kill the husband and then pretend that he's been kidnapped. And we find out she's a lawyer and doing shady insurance company lawyering here.
Yeah, well. Everyone deserves to be legally represented, I suppose.
Yeah.
I do appreciate that after she, does her stuff, she tells the guy, you need to fix your building or someone's going to die. Yeah. I appreciate that she's at least somewhat.
Like, legally, I got you off, but.
Yeah.
Pretends to receive a phone call that. From the kidnappers, the non-existent kidnappers.
Yeah, that was clever how she had her friend told her friend to call her to remind her about tennis.
Mm-hmm. And then that lets her stage the whole phone call. Yeah. And here we have the Harold Gould and the FBI.
Yep. Harold Gould is dead.
Yes. Yes.
But he's a pretty famous character actor. He's been in a ton of things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. For a long time.
Mm-hmm. We were talking before recording that you remember him from The Sting, which I have actually also seen. I most remember him from the terrible movie Master of Disguise.
Our taste in movies is laid bare here with our Harold Gould memories, I think. That's not quite fair for you, but I don't think you... Anyway.
I do own it on DVD.
The Dana Carvey movie?
Yeah.
Okay. And here's where Columbo randomly shows up at the house doing very Columbo things where he's lost his pen and he's trying to find his pen. And as you noted, and I think we both did, that here he actually looks like Columbo.
Oh, yeah. He's very disheveled. He has now become the role that he will continue to be throughout the rest of.
Yes.
I assume I haven't seen beyond season one. Maybe he gets very different in later seasons. But I'm guessing not.
There are differences that happen, but.
Well, he does get older.
Well, that's part of it. Yeah. I will say he sometimes strays into caricature as as he gets older to not so great effect sometimes. But I think I'm going to draw a parallel again to Star Trek because why not? It's almost Kirk Spock McCoy here where he's clearly. He's comfortable in the role already in like the second episode. And I think that it's amazing, when you go back and watch TOS, the original series, like how quickly they find the character that they're playing. And I think this is another case of that where he's already in that. He's already hit the ground running with this portrayal. Do we know why Columbo's here?
Yes. Harold Gould explains he's their liaison with the local police.
That's right. Okay. Thank you. And I think this whole setup is clever because now she's going to pretend that the kidnappers again are calling, but she has that recording of her husband. But she said in the note that we find out that she's a pilot and she's going to fly and drop the money out of the plane and all this stuff that it's this. She went to a lot of thought in setting this plot up because clearly she's not going to, get rid of the money that she's taken out. I think it's $300,000, I think is what they said.
Yes. Which was a lot of money.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of money today.
It is. Yeah.
But especially what year was this?
1971.
Doing an inflation calculator here. It would be $2.3 million today.
Now, I did question at one point they talk about what a financial strain this is putting her under. And she mentions to her stepdaughter that she had to liquidate all their assets to pay the ransom. And I think a lot of that is just to piss her off.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think she did have to liquidate all the assets. I think
they made a point of saying that when she got the money that they had to sell a whole bunch of stocks at a loss.
I believe they said they had to sell all her stock. Yes.
Right. Right.
But that, I mean, I would assume that they had other money.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they had other money, then wouldn't they have used that instead?
Yeah, but I mean, my assumption is that, like, she didn't have that much other money, but she probably still has a significant amount of money. Just like maybe like 100,000 or something.
We mentioned last time about the little Columboisms, like, oh, you came home and didn't call to your wife when you opened the door, and that was weird, and that sort of stuff like that. And here he's noticing that she gets the call, and with the tape recording from her husband, and she doesn't ask if he's okay. She just kind of goes along with the script, and he thinks that that's odd.
And like last time, I'm skeptical at how odd that actually is, but it works. But it mm-hmm. is there for the story.
I mean, it gets him suspicious,
right?
I do like his line about if I were kidnapped and my wife didn't ask if I was okay, I'd have to think about that a little bit or something like that.
But I mean, Harold Gould makes a point that she's like, you know, under a lot of stress
now. Under a lot of stress. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then she goes out to the airfield, and I'm trying to figure out why she goes to the airfield and then changes her clothes. Like, can't you do that at home? But maybe that's just what you do. Maybe you have a flight outfit that you keep at the airstrip or something. I don't know. Drops the empty bag. She has a very elaborate closet. All this decor just hurts my head. But yeah, so she never got rid of the money, obviously.
Well, yeah, no, of course not.
Do we ever really find out why she murdered her husband?
Just what the daughter said, the story right. the daughter tells, which mm-hmm. I assume is correct.
Okay. I mean, I guess it makes sense. She married him to get ahead in her career, and he was no longer useful to her, I guess.
Yeah.
And old and boring.
And Columbo makes the point. The way she's described him makes him sound like he was very boring.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. You know, obviously that's a good reason to kill someone because they're boring.
Right. But yeah, speaking of the stepdaughter, she shows up at the house. So the actor playing the daughter is 20 years old in this, and I don't need to dump on her much, but she's probably the weakest link of this episode by far in terms of acting. Not great. Very, very theatrical, over the top in a lot of ways. But
yeah, I also just gotta, like, I'm always confused when I see anyone with like tiny glasses lenses. Like,
what? It's a look.
Yeah, but like, how practical is that? Like, what is your field of vision when you have that? And I guess they're not that small.
It's no, just, they're.
I think because of how round they are, they look smaller than they actually are.
We get another the first, I think, of another trope that happens where Columbo often will irritate another member of law enforcement, mm-hmm. or vice versa. Sometimes Harold Gould is getting fed up with Columbo and his little niggling problems and things. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite lines of this is we find out that they find the body of the husband, and they go and talk to Lee Grant, who I guess I should, you know, actually use the character names. So Leslie Williams is the murderer. Her Paul Williams is the husband, and Paul Williams' body,
Margaret.
Yes. And Paul's body has been found, and they tell her about it in court, and she has kind of a breakdown. And that also makes Columbo think something's weird because it's unlike her behavior previously, which again, I had more of an issue with that one than anything else, where I would imagine finding out your husband is dead if you didn't kill him would have been a bit of a being overcome with emotion at that moment was not kind of out of the ordinary, I don't think.
Yeah.
But Columbo is basically saying, is continuing to investigate her, and Gould is like, leave her alone or I'm going to go upstairs with this, because and Columbo, in the most Columbo way possible, basically tells him to fuck off, where he says,
you asked me what was bothering me and I told you.
Let's understand this one thing. If you start harassing this woman, I'm going to take it upstairs.
Just one minute, Mr. Carlson. You see, it's like this. This is not just a kidnapping. This is a murder now. And I kind of figure that's my department. I'll see you around.
Like, this is not a kidnapping. This is now my case, and I can do what the hell I want, essentially.
Yeah. Oh, we should, before this happened, we should mention that there's the scene where Margaret's watching a movie.
Mm-hmm. She's watching Double Indemnity.
Which, I'm glad you knew it, because I didn't.
It's a movie about a woman who convinces this guy to help her murder her husband. Okay. And so it's one of the first femme fatale kind of movies.
True to form, I want to talk about that TV for a second.
Oh, with that needs a bit of an adjustment?
Yeah, but beyond that, is there always a TV in the dining room on the table? Did she bring it in from somewhere else? If she did bring it in from somewhere else, it's handy that there happened to be a antenna lead that she could connect it to in that room. Beyond that, there are three coax ports on the side of that TV. Okay, a couple things here. One, the cords go into the side of the antenna attaches to the side of the TV, which is strange in and of itself, because it's almost always on the back. Two, what are those three coax jacks for? I can see two, one for VHF, one for UHF.
Mm-hmm.
What's the third one? Three.
Super ultra high frequency.
I'm actually surprised it has coax at all in 1971. And that it's not just screw leads that you attach the wire to. Especially because, I mean, it's a TV with dials. Like, normally a TV this old with a separate dial for VHF and UHF, which actually wouldn't have been, I suppose, that old in 1971, wouldn't have coax. Because in this era, coax really only existed for cable, hence the name.
Yeah.
And even then, most TVs would have still connected with the screws and the little wire that you put into the screws.
Right.
This is before my time, certainly, but I have seen a lot of old TVs, and I'm just surprised that it has coax, but I'm even more surprised by the fact that it has three of them, because I have no idea what they're for.
I know it's not, but the plugs actually look more like component in and out plugs.
Like RCA jack? No, it's
yeah,
not.
Yeah, like, I mean, no, I know they're not, but they look like it, because they don't look like they have the screw threads as much as...
No, they're... They're the connector before the screw.
Right. It plugs in, but
no. It doesn't actually plug it. You press it in and then you turn it, and it has like a little track that it follows. BNC is the name of the connector.
Okay.
Yeah. If you do a Google image search for BNC connector, you'll see what I'm talking about. It was what coax used before it used the screw type thing. Actually, no, I don't know what all is there. It almost looks like there's XLR jacks on that.
That's what they look like on the top.
Yeah, I don't know what that's for.
These are the kind of things that you tune into this show to listen to when we get 4K versions of an old TV show and can see detail.
Okay,
like this.
We've got the three BNC connectors for coax cables. Below that is what I assume are the screws, but they kind of look like RCA ports. The connectors directly below the coax. No, they are RCA or something circular. So what I have to imagine, with this many ports doing weird things on it on the side of the TV, is that this is actually a TV that they use as a monitor in the studio, and they just
quick, you know what, that very well could be.
That's the only explanation I have for all these random ports on the side of it.
That, you know, that makes a lot of sense.
In 1971, watching this on a UHF television, you would not have been able to tell what those ports were. So
yeah, and you know, that's Yeah, like this is the one, this is where they would like monitor the camera, whatever the camera feed was.
Yeah.
Or something.
And that's
like,
why it has so many different connections on it.
Mm-hmm.
It almost looks like it has a SCART connection there at the top next to the things that look like beans that look like XLR.
I don't know what a SCART connector is.
So it was never more common in Europe. It was a composite video and audio all in. It was basically standard definition HDMI.
Okay.
But not digital.
Right. No, it was analog, but it carried both.
It was an all-in-one connector, but okay. It had like different pins for the different things, so it actually had a better quality signal.
Mm-hmm.
It actually did the red, green, and blue sort of component style separation and everything. And that kind of looks like that's what it is, the plastic thing to the left of the XLR jacks.
I randomly found this side of a old panel, and there are connectors that look like XLRs, and one's labeled AC adapter, and one of them is labeled camera/TV. So I'm thinking that this actually is these are for like tape recorders and or videotape recorders.
Yeah.
And things, but
that yes, but the outlet, that the camera TV similar. Connection is probably not AC because presumably it has right. a power cord out the back.
Yep.
But yes, that camera
which
TV connection
does lend itself to again thinking that this is a monitor that they pulled out
yeah,
of the studio.
It does look like those connectors there.
Yeah.
And then yeah, that's probably those two ports down below probably are audio line out or in.
Mm-hmm.
So those the two at the bottom that look like RCA jacks probably in fact are RCA jacks.
Yeah. Well, I mean they have the they don't have the red and the yellow, but it looks like it's gray instead of whatever that plastic material inside.
Right, those are the ones on the bottom. The ones above right. are bigger. Those are
oh, yeah. Yep.
Those are going to be the what looks like video in on this one is very similar, and that is I think coax, I think. It's just a funky coax. So yeah, this is definitely like a monitor from the studio that they were like, oh, well, that's a TV. We'll use that for the shot.
Yeah.
Because that was an easy way to get the video signal that they wanted onto it.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm also wondering, you know, since this is shot on film and old TVs were either 30 or 50 hertz, right? 30 or 60 hertz, and the film's 24. We're not getting any frame rate issues on the monitor.
Oh, so that's why they use. So yeah, if it's a monitor, it would be set to be 24 hertz. Yeah, that makes sense.
So I'm guessing that it was so you could see the image on the screen. So yeah. They got a 24 okay. hertz okay. TV screen.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. And again, anyone watching it originally wouldn't have been able to make out what was on the side of that TV.
Nope. But they might have been able to make out what was on the TV because
right,
they shot it at 24 hertz.
And they would be able to hear it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was quite a digression.
Sorry, you knew I can't resist discussing weird technology.
I can't believe I didn't even notice a single like I didn't even get to the whole why is there a TV on the dining table problem.
Anyway.
Margaret throws a fit at the funeral.
Yes, and blames, what's her name?
Leslie,
thank you.
That she says, this is what you wanted, isn't it? And all that stuff, and smacks her and runs off.
I like afterwards when all of Leslie's friends are just like, oh, you need to, or all telling her that she needs to, like, get rid of her. Dang, okay.
Cold. I mean, I wouldn't want Margaret around in my house either, but...
Fair. Certainly gets a bit much when she's, like, just shooting blanks all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. Columbo's a little creepy in this scene, I think, when he talks to Margaret.
Yes, he is.
I blame 70s sensibilities with that.
Yeah.
Like, walking up to her... Putting his hands on her, grabbing her hand, holding her hand. I'm always available, blah, blah, blah. Like,
so I feel like he phrased this really weirdly.
Mm-hmm.
Because normally you would say, the way you would say that, it would be like, if you need something, I'm here, or something like that. But what he says was, if there's ever anything you want.
Yes.
Which feels like a weird way to say that. Like, is Columbo hitting on her? Like, what's happening here?
I mean,
he's not.
No, it's just written. I agree. It's the way he says it, or not the way he says it, it's what he says that's problematic.
Like, Columbo is a quintessential wife guy. There's no way he's hitting on her. But no. And then I find it interesting when Leslie is talking to Margaret after her friends leave.
Mm-hmm.
And Leslie says, you should go back to school. And Margaret says, the school's closed for another month. There's no one to go back to. But, like, she only came home because her father was kidnapped. Like, what was she doing
otherwise?
Right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's a great point.
Yeah, and this is where she tells Margaret that they're broke mm-hmm. and there's going to have to be some adjustments. And this is absolutely just her. I take this not so much to mean that she has no, because she doesn't. She does have money because she asked mm-hmm. all the money that she had to give away. But beyond that, I take this more to mean that she's just trying to get it, Margaret.
Yeah. Like, oh, it's too bad we had to pay the ransom. You don't have any money in your trust fund now.
Mm-hmm. So then we go to the law office and Michael, the associate, comes in and Columbo's already there because the janitor let him in. Like,
right. What? That's not how that works. But
yeah,
he's a police officer, maybe, but still.
Maybe?
Oh, and here's the scene where Columbo's like, I don't know how you work for a woman, which is like, what?
What? And I take that not so much as a truthful statement from Columbo, but more trying to get, like, him trying to ingratiate himself to Michael in a way, or get a response from Michael. I don't think Columbo actually, like, is.
Yeah, because he certainly does that all the time with everybody.
The decor in the office, like, okay, uh-huh. it's not as bad as.
There's no giant statues this
time. Yeah, it's not as bad as the guy last week. But
they like green.
Painting those doors olive green was certainly a choice.
Well, it matches the leather chairs and the carpet. That amazing plush sofa in the background and the carpet.
The green velvet sofa? Yeah, that's a thing.
That's my grandparents had one like that was gold.
Did they keep a plastic cover on it?
No, actually, they didn't. But it was in that front living room that nobody used. So they did have that room. And here's where we get another little tidbit from Columbo that based on the angle of the bullet there, the shooter was sitting down and her husband was standing, which is weird.
OK, so looking at those punch cards.
Yeah.
Punch cards are supposed to have different spots punched out to, like, indicate different things. But these cards, I have all of the spots punched out on them.
The prop person didn't do a very good job, I guess.
I guess. But if we assume the punch cards are different, which, again, this is something someone in HD would not have seen. If we assume the punch cards are different, it's maybe not that they have a computer in taking up an entire room. But they have, like, a punch card for every. No, because it would need to have the phone number on it. So never mind, that wouldn't work.
I like the little aside where he's marveling at, I want to buy tickets, so I have to call this phone number and then the computer gets me the tickets.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, Columbo's got to get his tickets to the Eras Tour.
Yeah. I don't know why I just thought of Cosmo Kramer doing the movie phone thing.
Man, this is just making I remember the days when, like, for, like, big movies you would have to go to the movie theater, like, a couple weeks ahead of time and buy your tickets in person
mm-hmm. ahead of time.
Yeah, I was like, that's like bringing back a memory that I had forgotten about. Like, I remember buying tickets for the midnight premiere of Star Wars Episode 3.
Yes. Oh, I did that for Episode 1. That was money that was spent.
I'd rather watch Episode 1 than Episode 3.
Yeah. That's, yeah. Well,
I didn't get to see. I didn't get to see episode one at the midnight premiere. I mean, I would have loved to, but I don't think my parents would have been keen on that.
Mm.
For episode three, I mentioned to my parents that I wanted to go to that, and they said, "Oh, well, you're usually up that late anyway, so it's fine." But that was because that was my senior year in high school.
Yeah.
But like the year before, I had actually secretly gone to see Return of the King at the midnight showing. Mm. I literally snuck out of my bedroom window.
Wow.
And then like walked across town.
I was in grad school when that came out.
Well, yeah, you're old.
Yes, right.
I mean, so I'm old too, because the movies that I'm talking about came out like 20 years ago.
I know. Oh, yeah, the olive green painted wood door.
Yeah.
That's a choice.
Definitely is. And there is a bust in the corner.
Oh, yes, there is. I've never understood doors with the doorknob in the middle.
Yeah, that's...
like, the leverage is bad.
Mm-hmm.
I do like this whole thing where she's like, "I'm getting annoyed at your questions, so I'm going to scare the crap out of you in my plane."
Columbo's green cigar does match the decor of the office.
Yes, it does. Yes.
Yeah, I do enjoy that, where she's taking him on the plane and he's terrified. That's fun. And yes, it does have some bad rear projection.
Well, I mean, thankfully it's mostly against sky, so it's not as bad. The actual flying shots are pretty good, though.
Yeah.
Again, you wear that to fly the plane?
And then you see Columbo at apparently his local haunt.
Oh yeah, it's a famous chili spot.
Oh, is it a real?
Yeah, it's a real. It's a famous real location, or at least it was at the time.
Okay, so that's why he always gets the chili.
It would be like if you went to like Ben's Chili Bowl or something. Although I imagine the chili in this place is better.
Got it. Okay, so that's why he always gets the chili.
Yeah,
I'm just like, I'm not used to seeing diners with pool halls attached to them. Like, that's normally a thing you would see at a... But, like, so that's a whole thing that, like, I picked up on two instances that, like, seemed slightly odd to me. Is the diner with the pool hall attached to it, and then back in the first courtroom scene,
mm-hmm.
they talk about how the guy had three drinks at a cafe. And yes. I'm like, what kind of cafe is this?
Yes. Same kind of, it's a cafe that it would have like, a pool hall so attached to it. So
like
in 70s
California was like every diner, a coffee house and a bar and a pool hall at the same time. Like, was that just how things worked back then?
That reminds me of a line that I didn't mention before that I thought was funny, when the defense lawyer is saying that the hallways in the building were improperly lit. And then her response is, "But the client seems to have been," or something like that.
Yes.
But anyway, yeah. So Margaret goes to meet him at the chili. Oh, look at that cigarette machine in the corner. At the chili place / pool hall.
We've talked about cigarette machines relatively recently. Did mm-hmm. we see one in another thing? And I definitely remember talking to you about cigarette machines.
I think we were talking with Chrissy about them, so I don't know.
Okay, that was it. Okay. Yeah, because I was saying there's a bar in Carlisle that still has one.
Yeah, I think we were talking just about how recently it was that you could smoke in public, in public places and stuff.
Yeah, and there's Columbo, you know, with his ashtray at the diner, just smoking his cigar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a very vivid memory I have is when I was a kid going to the local farmer's market with my mother, and the guy that ran the apple stand always had a cigar in his mouth. And this was like an indoor farmer's market. Like, and that wasn't odd or anything. That was just what people did then. I saw a tweet recently. It was like, something that younger people don't understand is that until about 1995, the entire world smelled like cigarettes. Which is,
I don't know about the entire world, but
a lot of it for sure.
Like, I remember I definitely remember smoking and non-smoking sections in restaurants and right. like how that didn't actually work.
Yeah, but like before the 90s, air. That wasn't even, there weren't even separate smoking and non-smoking. Nope. It was just all smoking.
Mm-hmm.
Like my mom tells a story about how, like, my parents were never smokers. My grandparents were never smokers. But like how her uncle used to visit her parents when she was a kid, and he would smoke and he would ash in the cuff of his pants because they didn't have ashtrays.
Oh, man.
And it's like, so like there's a whole lot going on with that story.
Hopefully they weren't like super polyester pants or something, because that could go up really badly.
But like the fact that like it was OK for him to smoke inside of the house of people that didn't smoke is like the part mm-hmm. that's like, what the?
To borrow the phrase, kids these days won't remember that like cars had ashtrays in them and like mm-hmm. the back seats and the little doors and the.
I mean, I feel like we still call the power outlet a cigarette lighter outlet.
Yep.
But I wonder, does Gen Z call it that?
I don't know. Now they have USB-C ports instead of
yeah.
cigarette lighter outlets.
Well, they still, most cars still have
they do.
At least yeah. one 20 volt outlet, because there's a million accessories designed for it.
Mm-hmm.
But
the first USB ports I had were ones that you plugged into the 20 volt outlet and then you yeah, could charge your phone.
I mean, that's still how so, I charge yeah. my phone.
Yeah.
Anyway. Columbo. Chili.
Columbo. Yes. And eating chili.
And crackers are what make the chili.
Yes. I mean, I don't disagree.
So, do you think Columbo planned for her to fake evidence?
I think so.
Okay.
I think everything from this meeting with Margaret is part of the plan.
Do you think Margaret was in on it?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, okay. I think.
So you don't think he's manipulating Margaret? You think he told her everything?
I think. Everything after they fade to what I guess is a commercial is they had more of a conversation that we don't see.
Right.
Because she's talking about the history with the family and.
Because yeah, I wasn't sure whether he actually like this was actually part of his plan or if it just ended up working out.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I don't. The way he acts towards her. And the way she acts towards him, where she actually tries to hit him and stuff, that doesn't seem like something that wasn't staged to me.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, but is that just because she's a bad actress?
No, because he's doing it too. And he's getting very, he gets angry at her and stuff. And that's just not normal for him. Although we saw that last episode too. Yeah, because I mean, he mentions the car keys. And yes. then. Which is another one of those little interesting observation things where he's like, you just take them out and you don't think about it.
Yeah,
and
it makes sense.
And then she says, well, she must still have them, meaning Leslie the killer. And this is when he's like, oh, that's a crazy idea about, you know, don't go looking for the car keys. Like, that's, you know, that's not going to work. And right. she gets up to leave. And then he's like, you know, there's something with the car seat, which is another one of those things that you don't. That I didn't pick up on when I first watched it. And then when I went back and yeah, she puts the car seat forward because she's shorter than her husband. Mm-hmm. So this is where he's like, I think this is where he's kind of come around and like takes the keys out and I have it backwards. So the car seat happens first and then he mentions the car keys.
Yes. And then you think once it fades that they formulate the whole plan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I was about 50-50 on that, whether they formulated the plan or whether she acted on her own and then he was able to use that as a.
Because everything after this point with Margaret is over the top crazy, where she's essentially daring Leslie to buy her off and get rid of her,
mm-hmm.
which is what she does. I don't really understand. I mean, I get where they're going with it. I don't know exactly what. Leverage Margaret would have in this situation. Like, why would Leslie eventually just say, okay, fine, I'll give you a whole bunch of money to go away.
Mm-hmm.
In her mind, Margaret doesn't have any proof of anything.
And she doesn't.
And she doesn't. And, you know, faked the car keys, or maybe she didn't fake the car keys, actually. I don't know. But anyway, so like, you know, we have the keys, we have the fake gun business, or the blanks. And then eventually she's like, I want, well, my allowance was this much and you should give me some extra too. And then for whatever reason, Leslie says, okay, maybe because it's the easiest way to get rid of her.
Yeah. So I feel like even at the end, they don't have a slam. Columbo still doesn't have a slam dunk case. Not until Leslie basically admits defeat. Because she could have said, oh, well, I managed to scrounge that money together from somewhere else just to get her to leave me alone. Like, they don't have proof that the money is the ransom money.
Well, they do because they wrote down all the serial numbers.
Oh, did they?
Mm-hmm. They made a point of saying that when they were packing the money up to go in the plane, that they had tracked all the serial numbers.
Well, that's the problem. She should have laundered the money.
Mm-hmm. I do like this... this whole bit at the end where everyone just hangs out at the airport. Like, you don't do that anymore.
No.
Front cabin, general movie.
And those yellow chairs.
Oh, in the lounge? Yeah, that's, those are, it's like IKEA again, before IKEA. Ashtrays
everywhere.
Yep. There's even one on the ledge.
Mm-hmm.
By the window. Well, I guess that's like a little bar area for people.
There's seats there.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and the money gets brought out and he's got her and she admits defeat and she's not feeling like finishing her rosé.
No.
Thought it was funny that Columbo asked her if she wants to finish that, though.
Yeah. And I like the little button where the waitress comes to take for him to pay the check and he can't pay it. And he has this briefcase full of money.
The whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just like, you know, can I get a receipt for it and I'll expense it or something?
She's like, I guess that's all right.
Yeah.
But like, also, she probably wouldn't have been able to break 100 regardless.
True. Especially then.
Yeah.
I mean,
try paying for something
what
with
100. Like, what was it, like $2 and something?
It was less than $2. It was like $1.95 or something.
Including an alcoholic drink.
$1.95 for a root beer and a glass of wine. Just amazing. Today you wouldn't even get the root beer for that in an airport.
No, the root beer would be like $3
at least. This is an airport, remember?
That's
it would probably be like $5 or $6.
That's true. It was $1.10.
Jeez.
For a glass of sherry and a root beer. It's probably $1 for the sherry and 10 cents for the root beer. But
well, hold on, let me get back to that inflation calculator. 8.71 today.
No way.
No way. It would be way more. It would be 15 at least, I think.
You couldn't get a glass of sherry at any rest anywhere. Not even at an airport for $8.
Yeah, no. But also, who gets a glass of sherry at an airport? I mean, I guess someone does.
How good is it? I'm not a connoisseur of sherries, so.
But also, he, like, confidently orders that root beer. Like, they definitely have root beer on tap.
Mm.
Like, that is not a guarantee. Root beer probably was more popular back then than it is now. Like, root beer is, like, you can sometimes get root beer at a restaurant. It depends. But it's not like you're always going to get a cola. You're always, but, like, I feel like you don't always, there's not always a root beer option. Maybe there is. I don't know. I don't normally drink root beer. Root beer tastes like medicine to me.
Oh, really? Oh,
like, okay. Like, because medicine, a lot of medicine, like Pepto-Bismol has like the same flavor as root beer.
No.
Yes.
No way.
Yeah.
Pepto-Bismol's a wintergreen flavor.
Yeah, and root beer has that same sort of like flavor to it.
Don't ruin root beer for me. I like root beer.
It's cloying and sweet and bubbly, just like the Federation.
I was hoping that would come back around to that.
Well, I don't think we had talked about Star Trek yet tonight. So
a couple, well, not really, but
we didn't have any Star Trek guest stars.
No, I don't think Harold Gould was ever in Star Trek. Not He's probably the only person that I would have thought of might have been. But
anyway, do we have anything more to say about this episode of Columbo?
No, I don't think so. Final thoughts on this one?
It was pretty good.
Yeah.
I think we have definitely now sort of figured out who Columbo is and how these stories are going to go from this point on.
Yeah, I think so. He's very much the Columbo we're going to see going forward. I'm on the fence about whether I like this one better than the first one. I felt there were times in this one that it dragged a little bit. But, you know, I think it's a really well put together episode of television, almost a film.
More clever than the first one to me.
Yeah.
I like both of them.
Yeah. I mean, the other one definitely, you can tell if you look at it close enough that you can tell it was a play and then they just adapted it. And this is something wholly original that was made for TV or for the screen, I guess. And yeah, I agree. I think there were some interesting twists in there. I thought the ending was a little rushed in a way where I thought they could have dragged it out a little bit longer with Columbo and Leslie, not the whole setup with Margaret. Not in a way that I think it was damaged in any way. It just seemed to be over pretty quickly.
You know, right.
When they sit down and then, oh, here's the money. And she's like, okay, you win. And I like, I don't think we talked about it. I like Columbo's explanation where he said, you have no conscience. And that's how I knew that this would work too. Because you would have no trouble using this ransom money to pay off your stepdaughter to forget about her dad being murdered. And it never occurred to you that that was not something normal people would do.
Right.
Thank you so much for listening to us this episode. If you'd like to contact us, you can find us on Blue Sky at Podspiel, PODSPIEL. You can also find this episode and all back episodes of our show on our website, licensetospiel.com. That's license with a C. You can also find me on Blue Sky at Listening to Film.
And you can find me at Tyrannicus. That's TYRANICUS.
Yeah, so I mean, next time we will hit the ground running with the first official episode of the first season, Murder by the Book.
Yes.
One of the first directorial efforts of some obscure filmmaker named Steven Spielberg.
I don't know if he's going to go anywhere.
I don't know. He did that okay episode of Night Gallery, but that's about it.
What's Night Gallery?
Oh, it's what Rod Serling did after The Twilight Zone.
Ah.
And we can talk about it, but we can say that License to Spiel will return next week with Murder by the Book.
Do we really want to say we'll return next week? That feels...
License to Spiel will return next time.
There we go. That sounds
Murder
better.
By the Book.
I was gonna say that feels optimistic.
That's promising too much.